Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Get the Table, another Wrestling Roundtable discussion podcast with myself, Adam Wilborn, and one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, here to discuss another burning wrestling issue. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT pay-per-views. We have interviews, more roundtable discussions like this one, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, they're joined by Michael Sidgwick, and sir, we are gathered here today to talk about whether comedy gets in the way of wrestling. And before we dive into this, I should point this out, we are recording this on Thursday afternoon in the immediate aftermath of Le Dîner Debonair on AEW Dynamite, that has been mostly praised from what I could see, but has had a few detractors. It has been partially divisive, and so we sort of saw that as a jumping off point for comedy in wrestling. We sort of talked about this on our Wednesday Night War review. For those who haven't heard it, though, what did you make of Le Dîner Debonair between Chris Jericho and MJF going for a steak dinner?
I thought it was a triumph. I thought it was an absolute triumph for several reasons, which I will outline right now. One thing to bear in mind is, because I've watched it back several times, it was so goddamn great and funny and just absurd, and I loved it. The actual song and dance starts after they have what is essentially a promo with different set dressing to normal. And it was announced as an actual scheduled thing that was going to happen on the show, so it didn't just happen halfway through it, tracked somehow, conveniently, as a contrivance, by an invisible camera. So they've gone to AEW, that is, extreme lengths to put this over, as absurd as it was in and of itself, as something that was scheduled to happen, was going to happen in the fabric of AEW. So it starts off, we know the skit by now. Everyone who loved it has watched it a million times. Everyone who hated it, it's obviously resonated in their memory. They do the whole bit about them trying to get each other down to the rare blue steak, which, how do you like your steak, Wilborn?
Medium rare, actually.
Medium rare. It's perfect, isn't it? Medium rare is it for me. With rare, the thing about rare for me is that I miss the char on the top. And I just think there's a certain texture for medium rare that just nails it. I think it's the perfect way to cook the steak.
Also, I heard Alvarez say this and doing some research for this, but I mean, every heel in wrestling has their steak well done, don't they? I mean, it's obvious. It's an obvious place to see. Obviously, you have to start there if you're going to get to blue by the end. But the most heelish thing to have a steak in what form would be well done. So, yeah.
Because you're destroying the cut. You are destroying the cut. A cow died for you to have no taste. So they do the bit, and it's fantastic because they establish themselves as heels with no taste. They're all mouth, no trousers, all the gear, knee idea. They're arseholes, so they have it well done. So they get each other down to that awful blue. And a steak connoisseur would call me worse than for not wanting a blue steak. Mm-hmm. But in their minds, it's disgusting. It's probably the worst thing ever. So they do all this. And then they're falling out because they are having a macho piss measuring, piss in contest. because that's what the storyline is. They are shadowing one another in a bid to prove that if you're Chris Jericho, you're saying MJF, you're not as good as I'll ever be. If you're MJF, you're saying Chris Jericho, I'm you, except better for a newer generation. So this is all wonderfully realized in the form of this running gag. So they're falling out, it's all very tense, and then they bond by burying Orange Cassidy. It is at this moment, Wilborn, that MJF says, see, we're getting along already. We're already working through our differences. He says, cannot imagine if we were together. And then he says the three magic words, just picture it. And then the camera pans to Chris Jericho. It captures Chris Jericho for 2-3 seconds, enough for this to linger and for it to have been done deliberately in deep thought. Then there's a jump cut to MJF. Boom, elbow on the table, and the music starts. What's happened here is that the song and dance never actually happened in canon, right? It never happened. This is all playing out in Chris Jericho's mind. So the song and dance, which I'll get to again imminently, does not happen. It finishes, the scene returns to the dinner table, and their steaks arrive, and they are like bloody disgusting. They're raw. It's raw meat, and it's a nice sight gag. And that bonds them together to tease the fact that this breakup, when it happens, is going to happen on another night. So even in the construct of the fiction and how all of this happened, this didn't actually happen. He said, just picture it. And it all unfolded in Chris Jericho's mind's eye. Now, it did and it didn't happen because we saw them sing and dance. It was a fabulously done bit of comedy. It played to the strengths of the performers, who are very much outwardly, in the context of AEW, performers. Mm-hmm. Right? They love performing. Chris Jericho sings his own goddamn theme song. He loves the idea of being a performer. MJF has the suits. He has the ceremony. This is so congruous to what these characters would do. And in fact, it still didn't even happen. What I'm getting at is that if you hated this comedy, and there are very few more divisive subjects than comedy, particularly in pro wrestling, you can't say that it destroyed kayfabe or it was a silly thing to do, because they arranged this so subtly and with so much work in terms of framing it as a segment and setting it up that it wasn't just a bizarre non sequitur. It was a nice bit of absurdist comedy. So you can't say it betrayed the integrity of invisible cameras or the sporting construct of how their cards are invariably announced in advance. Nothing happens impromptu. So context specific, the situation of this bit does not betray a single goddamn thing about what AEW is trying to achieve.
I completely agree with you on all this. And certainly MJF and Chris Jericho aren't the only ones to turn their nose up at raw things. But I'm going to be the devil's advocate here and throw some of the protests that I've read about this. And I think it's absolutely fair. If, you know, comedy and wrestling in particular is subjective. Our very own Andy Murray wasn't a fan of this segment, which is, you know, this isn't us saying, oh, you all should like it. But I think there's been a lot of performative takes on this that aren't akin to what Andy has said. He just said, oh, I didn't really like it. I felt it sort of undercut it all. But there were some people who said, well, I'll just say them all to you now and you can go through each one, basically. The most obvious one, if WWE did this, you'd tear them to pieces.
This is one of my least favourite takes, right, ever. In terms of, right, things exist, Wilborn, and they're called genres, right? You can have good and bad anything. Except incest and Morris dancing, right? That's the famous British idiom. You can have good and bad everything. I, in fact, half praised a WWE Raw skit involving Otis because The Miz popped my tits off with a very cruel joke. Just a mask, right? WWE can do comedy well. WWE did, in fact, do comedy well with the Festival of Friendship, which I think is literally one of the best things they've ever done.
Yep.
You can do comedy. It's an American TV show. Of course you can. So AEW have done it. WWE have done it. WWE have done it to mixed success. And by mixed success, I will revert to Natalya having flatulence, and Steve Austin and Vince McMahon was essentially a sitcom. It was essentially a situational comedy. The situation was Monday Night Raw, and virtually everything was played for laughs. And it was one of the most monster drawing programs of all time. I praised one and hated the other. I think you can tell which. It's fine. It's absolutely fine. Both companies have done comedy. Both companies, in fact, AEW, Tony Khan had an interview with, I think, Wade Keller before the launch of Dynamite. He did a two-hour podcast in which he set out what was going to happen on AEW. He said he was very keen on scheduling every match in advance with an emphasis on in-ring action. He hates the idea of the invisible camera. Again, the camera had a reason to be there last night or on Wednesday night. And he said specifically, you will see moments of comedy because we've got really funny people on our roster. Why would you not maximize that?
Yeah, I kind of want to tackle one of the complaints that I saw about this because it pissed me off to high heaven to see people saying, SpongeBob meme, I thought you said AEW was going to be sports-centric. Right, sports-centric is a show that has 5 really important matches on it. And of course, you know, other stuff as well. You had Britt Baker in action too, but you had 4 AEW world title eliminators and the number one contenders match to determine who the tag team champions are going to face at Full Gear in a few weeks, right? Sports centric is generally sports focused, not 100%. I mean, because I'm a huge UFC fan as well. And I'd say, you know, yes, UFC is majority sports-centric, but it involves a bit of pageantry as well. You wouldn't have Conor McGregor if you didn't have, if it was completely just, right, who's the best MMA fighter? You know, it would just be whoever the best fighter is, not Israel Adesanya is a perfect example. You probably don't know who Israel Adesanya is. He's a fighter in the UFC, middleweight champion, I believe. And when challenging for that title, okay, he's in his 20s, right? The night he challenged for the title, he didn't walk to the ring and walk to the octagon and go, right, fully serious now. I'm challenging for the title. I need to, you know, need to focus up here. He did a dance routine that involved some of his teammates and him dancing after his teammates had done the Liam Neeson line from Taken, and he did like flips and stuff, and then he went and won the title, right? It's insane, right? But that is entertainment. It, like this whole, oh, it's sports-centric, so you can't do anything outside of that bubble, is a preposterous argument. One other thing I wanted to bring to you before we move on and talk about some other things here is the sort of opposite of what I said when I gave you the first sort of devil's advocate scenario, which is, oh, well, you'll support anything AEW does and say it's the best thing ever. Like WWE have done a rock concert this week and did a karaoke show a while back on SmackDown. I didn't see you praising that. I mean, it's low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to give it to you anyway.
There's a lot to take in there because I've got so many thoughts on all of those things. The karaoke segment on SmackDown was literally 1 million miles away from the Dinner Debonair in terms of both quality and intent. The karaoke segment was absolutely rotten in terms of performance and why it existed. Why it existed in particular. MJF and Chris Jericho did Dinner Debonair because Chris Jericho is masterful at comedy. MJF is too. And MJF has a stage school background because he can sing, act, and dance.
What a voice.
They developed their feud and maximized what they are good at. And more to the point, this wasn't Tony Khan just saying, do this, pal, it'll make me laugh. They wanted to do it themselves because they have creative control over their characters. The karaoke segment on SmackDown was simply Road Dogg with the worms in his goddamn brain. People would get over. And bear in mind, he's been on After the Bell with Corey Graves saying that he doesn't trust half of the people to cut promos there because they might be loose cannons. So what he's done is get a 25-year-old song to be sang by Lacey Evans, his song, because he was a great promo, apparently. He got people to say, suck my dick. That's not necessarily been a great promo. He's never promoted a fantastic must-see match that you just, you have to see it. That's what a promo is. He's a good talker, not a great promo. That company subjected those women to sing Road Dogg's 25-year-old song because it's absolutely in love with its history when it was once successful, and tries to pattern everything it does after that to the embarrassment of the women on that roster. They could not have been, in terms of quality or philosophy, any more different. Now, to briefly touch on the point about the sports-centric AEW thing, right? For a more fleshed-out analysis of my retort, I compel you to Google the following editorial. How AEW has actually answered its biggest complaint. It's all about the sports-centric thing, which, when people say, oh, I'm just so disappointed in AEW, I was expecting a sporting product. That's in bad faith. They are saying this because they're trying to be a bit more clever than your garden variety, AEW sucks, lol, troll. The sports-centric thing matters, and it matters because they schedule their cards completely announced in advance as if, and I've used this quote before, but it's a show, it's a sporting card to be filmed rather than a show to be presented. Everything's accounted for. No one can just have an impromptu match for right here, right now. The wrestlers can't dictate what happens in the main event because the main event is set, because why wouldn't you set a main event like people would schedule a fixture in a sport? So that's important. Sports-centric was never a promise not to do comedy. It was always about the very loose emulation pro wrestling can do a sport. And by that, I mean the prestige of the titles. How much of a complete unbeatable figure does John Moxley look? Because he wins clean and they don't do corny finishes. That's sport. Everything's decisive. How much did it break Hangman Page and Kenny Omega to lose those titles? How much gravity do those titles therefore hold? Because in losing them, Hangman Page lost his professional identity and said, I'm head to toe like poison. How many people who've lost titles or lost number one rankings in sport have had their psyches completely fall apart after a bad run? That is sports-centric narrative driving. In terms of how certain performers, not all of them, because pro wrestling, reductively, is people who hate each other, having a reason to hate each other, and then beating each other up. But so many programs, Moxley versus Kenny Omega, MJF versus John Moxley, FTR versus the Bucks, are all centered around which disciplines these athletes excel at. They are so less performers than they are athletes who've excelled at a discipline, hold that discipline that they've excelled at dear to the point that it forms their very personality and their conflicts with other people. How often have you seen Cody do a UFC-esque fight promotion on the Road 2 series? It's so much more sport than sports entertainment. And I think it's such shallow criticism to say, that's just like WWE this. It isn't, man. It's entertainment. As you very correctly point out, sport itself is entertaining. I would much rather watch the post-match interview in which Jurgen Klopp buries Steve Bruce for hoofing the ball up top to Andy Carroll than I would watch Newcastle United play for 90 minutes. There's a drama in a pissed off Premier League manager press conference that just adds to the entertainment and, as you say, the pageantry of everything. If you want to watch sport, and this is a genuine point I'm about to make, ROH's Pure Wrestling title tournament is unfolding as we speak, free of charge on Fight TV. It is as strict an emulation of pro wrestling as a sport as you will ever see. Very limited pageantry. They are just wrestling in the ring under a very strict and very much enforced system of rules, and they are just doing athlete things to win a title. Watch that. Watch that if you are, in fact, as ardent about the sports thing and looking at those numbers that ROH are doing, looking at the lack of buzz it's generating online, I think you're lying.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's extend this discussion out a little bit more then to sort of overall question about comedy within wrestling. Because one of the complaints I saw about the Dinner Debonair, which can be extended out to general wrestling, is it's just kind of ruined the feud between Jericho and MJF because it's just all a big piss take. I don't really see them wanting to fight or getting on board with them potentially fighting down the line. So has the comedy element in this ruined this feud? Ruined is a bit of an over-exaggeration, but, weakened this feud. And is that a general rule when it comes to comedy and wrestling?
That remains to be seen. I will say that I do not, at this present moment, take it too seriously as this life or death thing that is incredibly important to either man that they want to fight and end the other at present. That's not necessarily a bad thing, but that's what traditionally has sold pro wrestling. My thoughts on comedy and pro wrestling are, as my thoughts mostly are concerning virtually everything, it's situational. It's totally situational. I think Chris Jericho versus Orange Cassidy's subjective tastes kind of veered too far into comedy in the sense that I couldn't really take it seriously as this grand humiliation that Chris Jericho went into a vat of mimosa. I just couldn't. If it was sold better, and it's all in the selling, everything in pro wrestling is in the selling. If that vat of mimosa wasn't just sold as, someone's going to do a wacky comedy spot in the finish of this match. If they had stressed the humiliation of looking like a drowned rat, having been defeated by someone who was a meme wrestler on the shindies a year before this, that would have really resonated. It's all in the selling. Something like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Hangman Page at Revolution, right? That was such an emotionally divisive, gripping, torturous match that was so well done throughout. The conflict was divided, who you wanted to win, who you wanted to lose, who you wanted to just get the face kicked in. And sometimes it was Matt Jackson for his smug grin. Sometimes, maybe in the build-up, it was Hangman Adam Page, who was all but mostly received as a babyface in the saga because he was kind of a glory hog. What I'm getting at is they played with your emotion in the absolute apex of great pro wrestling melodrama, in my opinion. And yet, to build that match that on the night was as serious as it gets, and it was received as serious as it gets. Hangman Page on the Dynamite 2 or 3 weeks before drank a pitcher of beer and a sight gag. That did nothing at all whatsoever to undermine that program. In fact, just these little nice tonally different departures can just completely benefit the palette of a pro wrestling feud. We saw it with Austin McMahon. Austin made McMahon piss himself on telly, and yet, because they were so great at cycling through modes, and you do need range to be able to do this, they were so good at cycling through modes that a week later to get his heat back in this wonderful cycle that they managed to engineer. Vince McMahon would have the corporation strap down Austin in the corner and scream bloody murder in his face with his neck going red, his gulp thing, veins completely throwing spittle in Steve Austin's face, like a vicious, psychopathic bastard. And you still wanted Austin, no matter how funny he was, to come back and beat this person who had pissed his pants a few months prior. Because you can take him seriously, because you can navigate these modes, these tones, and still come out with your heat. It's all about performance. It's all about selling. It's all about situation for comedy and me. And I think one of the reasons why we've seen quite a surplus of it in AEW, obviously we had a lot of the Double or Nothing, quasi-canon, as I like to term it, because it was just so important for the tone. We needed that levity at the time. Now that we're kind of accepted, right, okay, this bollocks is not going away, so let's just do normal pro wrestling. The collective psyche of people in general makes it very hard to do heat. It's not just to do with the fact that we know it's all a work. We know that these people, more often than not, do not hate each other. It's a work of fiction that, because wrestling traditionally operated as a work of reality, and maybe people bought it, maybe there was just a more earnest disposition among the general public at the time of these big, amazing heat angles that you read of and rewatch in the 80s. And before that, you had Freddie Blassie getting stabbed and poured acid all over him. It was much easier to engineer a big heat angle. And this is kind of a troubling thing for pro wrestling, considering that's what traditionally builds it. It was so much easier to elicit that reaction in more innocent times than we live in now. Like, I don't get worked by anything in fiction anymore, because I personally am so numb to the horrors of real life. Everything's so ironic nowadays. There's no one earnest on social media. You'll get buried for being earnest. You'll get called corny if you're earnest. Everything's ironic. Everything's detached. A lot of people are just coasting through life in a fugue state of, oh Christ, whatever next, whatever wave upon wave of unrelenting horror are we going to see the next time you log into Twitter or open a newspaper? And it's not just pro wrestling. It is not just pro wrestling. Something like WAP, right? If that came out when I was 14, 15, and I was being told I can't listen to Marilyn Manson because he will disturb your tiny little mind, or Eminem, God, he got his chainsaws out on stage, we can dedicate full-page tabloid spreads to Eminem. Marilyn Manson was blamed for Columbine, as if it was that easy, and at one point, people tried to tell you it was. That sense of people's thought process is completely gone. You cannot be earnestly worked anymore, hence why I think the days of the big heat angle are gone. So why not toy with comedy to try and broaden that range of enjoyment out of your entertainment show, your escapism on a night?
I think it's about light and shade. I mean, the microcosm of this is your enjoyment of NXT. You're not someone who woke up and decided, you know what, now I like AEW, I have to hate NXT. You know, you can say that about Monday Night Raw or SmackDown, because they are, you know, the titans of Vince McMahon's, you know, company. But you have started to enjoy NXT more because, I mean, Johnny Gargano has gone from being super duper serious to being angry at wheels now. And, you know, I think element, you know, and it also works the other way. You would never turn around and go, oh, I can't wait to see what happens with that whole 24/7 championship, because they've gone far too far in that direction now and just gone, oh, bollocks, we'll just do whatever with that. I want to sort of continue this by talking, you mentioned Orange Cassidy there. I want to talk about comedy wrestlers and your overall opinion of that. I know your thoughts on Orange Cassidy, but, you know, you look across history, and there are some, you know, Colt Cabana is another example of someone who can use it well, or you know, the Hurricane, even to a certain extent. R-Truth, it has his moments. And then there's people like Santino Marella. What are your thoughts on that sort of genre of competitor?
Again, if it's funny, I will like it. You can work comedy into the traditional fabric of kayfabe. Here's one point I'm going to make before I speak about Orange Cassidy in particular, right? I don't like this construct of a take generally, but in this specific instance, I think it is true. the Venn diagram of people who will say, oh, AEW sucks, I can't take this kind of wrestling seriously anymore, and those who've genuinely failed to remember what 80s professional wrestling is or was, that is a circle. I go back because I love it, man. I absolutely love it. I love going back and watching mid-80s to late 80s, NWA, JCP, right? I love that period of professional wrestling. And something like Tully Blanchard versus Magnum TA, I Quit Steel Cage, right? I've never seen anything I don't think that serious in AEW. Maybe them sanctioned with Mox and Omega, right? But again, you cannot capture that moment in time of how earnest people felt about things. So you'll never get that. However, right, people are going to think this is sacrilege. But I promise you, go back and watch some of those early Clash of the Champions. A lot of what a performer like Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, who are held aloft by a lot of these complainers and trolls and mutants as this vanguard of like all proper men doing proper men stuff in a pro wrestling thing before it was polluted by this, yes, outlaw, mudlaw stuff. A lot, a great deal of what Arn Anderson did was slapstick. A lot of what he did was slapstick comedy. I'm sorry, that's what it is. And I love it, and it's great, and it's so cathartic when after their heel bastardry goes down and Dusty or Sting builds to that comeback, they'll flop about like it's a slapstick comedy, and they will do that, and it gets the heat, and it gets people going, hey, look at them. They've been beaten up. How funny is that? How great is that? A lot of the performance is slapstick. It genuinely, truly is. If you look at Mr. Perfect, some of his bumping was comedic. Like, it was so over the top. And Mr. Perfect is considered, rightly, because Kurt Hennig was fantastic, is one of the all-time great technicians. And yet you see some of his bumps, and they are funny. Rick Rude sold atomic drops as if his arsehole had just shot upwards into his spine. And he would do the four-legged thing as if, like, there was a stinging sensation in his arsehole, and he did a funny walk because it hurt. I mean, it's been comedy all this goddamn time. It drives me insane. Orange Cassidy.
Sorry, did you say that? I've got that meme where it's the two astronauts just going, it's comedy. It's comedy? Oh, it always was.
It's true. Honestly, it's bloody true. Orange Cassidy, right? Again, I don't want to put myself over, but I'm going to. A lot of these people who have these takes, it's willful ignorance in my opinion. And again, I don't care if you can tell me why you didn't like a comedy skit, as long as you've got a decent argument to support it that isn't just ignorant or hateful or in bad faith. Orange Cassidy, to date, has not done a single thing in AEW that badly interferes with the so-called integrity of old kayfabe, as if we're not completely past that point, right? Orange Cassidy on the indie circuit would completely take the piss and just embrace this avant-garde, like, derangement of what kayfabe was. He would roll around on the ring when people were doing, like, running the ropes and trying to, you know, the trip-up spot where you slam yourself down to the mat. Mm-hmm. He would just do it so slowly, like the sloth, and then roll about, and then the person running the ropes would just run over him and run over him, and then realize, oh, he's not trying to trip me up. Just this lazy bastard rolling around the canvas. Like, they would do stupid comedy spots like that. But he's never once done it, right? Never once done something like that in AEW. He does his kicks, and he'll graze his calves and of his opponents, but no one ever sells that. No one ever sells that to play along as this winking, ironic approach to professional wrestling. Right, I've got a question for you, Wilborn, and this, for me, answers it, the whole debate. What horror film were you most scared by?
I think the concept of a horror film that's always stuck with me is something like 28 Days Later. Oh. I don't do zombies. I really don't do zombies. It's a big, big weakness of mine. I have recurring nightmares about it, so I'm going to go with that one.
Does the knowledge that a movie like Scary Movie exists ruin the immersion or the fear factor of a 28 Days Later?
No, exactly. Like, if you're scared of a Jason Voorhees or a Michael Myers, if someone goes,
no, that's only an actor just playing a role, isn't it?
Like, I realise they're two separate things. Stop me crapping my pants when I watch them.
So if you watch a scary movie, you could have a laugh. If you took that out of your Blu-ray or your DVD player and put 28 Days Later in, like, are you still going to be scared of 28 Days Later?
100%. I'm just even thinking about it. It's not good for me.
So for me, when people say our comedy's ruining the business, or if you put comedy on the show, I can't take it seriously. Ultimately, what a bollocks argument that is. The existence of Scary Movie does not make Hereditary, which is the movie I'd be most scared of, or the original Blair Witch, does not make those films any less scary. If something is good, irrespective of what's going around it, even on the same show, if the performers are talented enough, and if you're willing to suspend your disbelief, you can lose yourself in that story still.
Just whilst we're talking about this, and I've written, like, how much is too much as a question, like, where do you stand on stuff like the invisible hand grenade or all the silly stuff that you see on the indies?
For me, it's totally situational. I would not want to see the hand grenade spot in AEW. Maybe on Dark. I wouldn't give a toss if it was on Dark. I don't want to see something in AEW specifically, because it's always, everything always comes back to AEW these days. I would never want to see something like that spot in AEW specifically because, as I pointed out, using the example of Orange Cassidy, there is the completely logical foundation of what can and can't happen in an AEW ring would not support such a spot. I would happily go to a PWG show again. I would happily go to a banter indie, not in the UK, I don't want to be molested, and watch a spot like that in its own correct context. It's ultimately situationally dependent. That's the best answer I can possibly give. It might be a short one. Some people will be relieved at that because I tend to go on a bit. But that is ultimately the answer. How far is too far? In WWE, as an example, the 24/7 stuff is too far. Something like The Miz and Otis isn't, because like they would do that as characters. It's just ultimately situationally dependent. As I said, with Orange Cassidy and Chris Jericho, I genuinely felt, much as I enjoyed the early part of that feud, they did play it too comedic to the point that when they had the match, I just thought, there's no gravity in this. Mm. There's no real gravity in this. It's just a pool of mimosa. We're going to get a funny little visual for Chris Jericho falling in it, and he's going to be funny selling it. But ultimately, it's just a pool of mimosa, and I couldn't get into it. With Le Dinner Debonair, in contrast, to use the same performer as an example, that's so perfectly tethered to the story and the characters of them peacocking each other and shadowing each other in a bid to prove that one person hasn't got it anymore and one new person has. All of that is just wonderful bells, whistles, smoke, mirror, pageantry to the core issue at play here. So it's all completely situationally dependent. And as I said, if you don't like something on one show, it's meant to be a variety. We've seen how abysmal, homogenized, monopolized, regulated corporate professional wrestling has been for 20 years. I'd much prefer a buffet, even if it gives us rancid discourse as a side dish.
And to that point, as we bring things to a close here, and I've run through comedy wrestlers, aside from Orange Cassidy and someone like Colt Cabana, you run through that list, like R-Truth, your Santino Morellas, whoever you can think of, in terms of the Spirit Squad, people like that in WWE. Is it the fact that WWE's kind of warped our perceptions of comedy because it's only what makes Vince McMahon laugh is what they consider comedy? Is that the reason why people think that the two, the two things shouldn't mix?
I would say so. The thing with WWE, and again, everything's filtered through our perception of WWE to the point that it kind of haunts us like a looming ghost, and we have to be, I don't want this to happen. It's going to be too much like WWE. The WWE's problem is not doing comedy. It absolutely isn't a problem whatsoever. I would still say Chris Jericho's probably overtaken him with this AEW run because it's so goddamn hilarious. My favorite comedy wrestler, it's not a comedy wrestler, my favorite funny wrestler is probably Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? And to be fair, right, there is a genuine argument that Stone Cold played too much comedy in 2001 and his aura was kind of ruined and shot as a result. So yes, there is a balance, as I mentioned earlier, going through those modes that needs to be struck, and that is very important. But Steve Austin is the funniest pro wrestler of all time for me. But with Chris Jericho being number one and number eight, WWE's problem isn't doing comedy, right? It absolutely isn't the problem. WWE's problem is that literally everything is frivolous. Everything is frivolous to the point where the titles don't mean anything. The rules don't mean anything. The narrative framework doesn't mean anything. It's a silly show that often materializes just to pop Vince with his fecal matter obsessions and the like. It's WWE's frivolous approach to everything, not silly comedy, that is the problem there.
And finally, just as we finish here, I think the other thing is, it's also WWE's laziness when it comes to that comedy. Like, whatever your opinions of that Le Dîner de Manair segment, they worked at that for weeks, for over a year, as you've pointed out on your Twitter, at M. Sidgwick. But, like, they established that MJF is, you know, in all but name, Chris Jericho's protege a year ago, for example. And then in the last, even just if that was, if you know, if you'd forgotten about that, in the last few weeks, it was, oh, Chris Jericho and MJF, they've got quite a lot in common, haven't they? Blah, blah, blah. Hence, me and my shadow. This wasn't them just out of the blue going, let's just do a musical number with MJF and Chris Jericho. The comparison I would draw in terms of like the polar opposite of that, the laziness, is just have Doink the Clown and Brother Love show up in the middle of the Money in the Bank match. Because, I mean, they were funny, weren't they? Yeah, but they did stuff to be funny. It wasn't just, well, hell, here they are sort of thing. Like, it's that amount of craft that, you know, you have to work at a joke. It's not just...
Well, absolutely, I completely agree.
You know, slapstick is fine. I find slapstick... We're talking about it on the news when we were talking about this. Talking about the, like, not unintentionally hilarious, but, like, surprisingly hilarious moment. And I said one of the first things that came into my head is Shawn Michaels kicking Stan, by Dillinger, because it was so out of the blue and so hilarious. But there's also, a craft to it all. And I just think, like you say, not to go all, oh, what about the Attitude Era, but they did used to be able to do this. Some of it might not have aged well, but they did used to be able to do comedy. It's just now they've just gone, just have them wear white and drop poo on them from the ceiling.
Yeah, indeed. It's, again, like, good comedy is divisive, bad comedy is divisive, all comedy is divisive. If you can integrate it into the product without completely undermining it, that's pro wrestling for you. That is pro wrestling for you.
I guarantee.
What's your tournament? It's really good.
I guarantee. when I send the Le Dîner Debonair clip round to the lapsed wrestling fans that I know, they will not turn their nose up and go, game's gone. Sorry. They're going to go, what's this? What's going on? It's
one of my least favourite takes is, you know what? Do you know what happened actually, Wilbon, this morning? I forgot to tell you about this on the podcast. James woke up, right in the middle of bloody Dynamite, and he started watching Le Dîner Debonair with me. And he said to me, he turned to me and he said, Dad, I said, yes, son. And he said, is this what you write about for a living? And I said, why, yes, son, it is. Dad, don't think I want to watch this when I'm older anymore. And I said, son, you're lying, because these things don't happen. You know, my wife saw this and she thought it wasn't very good. I shut up, man, you stupid arsehole. You're lying.
And then everyone started applauding. So anyway, so in summary,
the restaurant the other day. What was it? Hipster coffee shop? Nah. Google hipster coffee shop for some laughs.
It's like
I think his name was.
In fact, James has written what he thought about AEW Dynamite, didn't he? And then signed it so you could post it on the internet for some. No, but in answer to our question, our overarching question, no, comedy is not getting in the way of wrestling. If anything, it can be used to complement it. But do let us know your thoughts on everything we've discussed. Really enjoyed talking about this now. At What Culture WWE, watch there. You can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilber. Follow us all at What Culture WWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. This has been Get the Table. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us.
and we will see you soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.